This week on Behind the Lens. Environmental activists filed a lawsuit against the St. James Parish Council over what they say was a secret meeting about a proposed chemical plant. We'll have the details. And help wanted. The Orleans Parish School District is hiring someone to conduct annual audits of student transcripts and a new charter operator for two schools as the fallout from a recent graduation scandal at Kennedy High School continues. Also, the New Orleans City Council is starting the long process of authorizing a tax on short-term rentals as part of the mayor's Fair Share infrastructure funding deal. We'll have an update. I'm Jessica Rosegard. You're listening to Behind the Lens, a podcast by The Lens.
Brought to you by community support. Learn more at support.thelensnola.org.
A lawsuit filed in state court claims the St. James Parish Council and Planning Commission violated state open meetings laws when they held a secret meeting about a $1.25 billion chemical plant proposed in the parish. Ann Rolfes is the founding director of the Louisiana Bucket Brigade. The group is one of the plaintiffs in the lawsuit, along with Rise St. James and parish residents Genevieve Butler and Pastor Harry Joseph. Ann Rolfes joins me now. Tell me how what the parish council did constitutes a secret meeting.
They have in emails, in writing, from a person who has really been a you would say, the role of villain in all of this bringing chemical plants to the parish. His name is Blaise Gravois. He's the director of operations, and he explicitly wrote in emails, we want to meet with the planning commission and with the parish council, but in order to avoid basically the legal requirements, we can't all meet together. So some of you come at 6 and some of you come at 7. And that way, it will be able to evade all of the laws about open meetings and about transparency. That act in itself of trying to organize ways to evade the law is evading the law. And that's what our lawsuit says.
You mentioned transparency. That's why the state has open meetings laws, to provide the community with transparency so that they know what their government is doing.
Absolutely. We all have a right, and especially in situations like this where the stakes are so enormous, where the parish wants to move in a very dangerous chemical plant right next to a community. The law is supposed to be construed very liberally to say that you have to do everything possible to make sure the public is informed. And clearly, in the case of St. James Parish, they bent over backwards to exclude the public from this meeting.
Now, parish governments, state governments are allowed to have closed meetings. So where's sort of the balance there between a secret meeting or a closed meeting?
Yeah, they're allowed to go into executive session when there are questions about the legalities. The law, and it says this in our lawsuit, if you are going to meet and not let the public in, you have to say so. This happened really recently, actually, in a meeting regarding this same chemical plant, Wanwa, in which the parish council went into a back room for an extended period, discussed whether or not to give the company the free trade zone it's asked for, and then came back out into the public view. So we all knew that conversation was happening. The difference here is that this was a meeting planned in secret, hidden from public view, and the only reason we know about it is because enterprising people at the Tulane Environmental Law Clinic went and found those emails.
So if the public wasn't at the meeting, do we know what happened at the meeting, and was anything decided then?
We have no idea. I mean, we have to rely on people who broke the law to tell us what happened at the meeting. They claimed in their quotes to the local newspaper that nothing was decided, and all we were looking at is information about air modeling, you know, which means where air pollution is going to go. And that seems awfully relevant to the residents to me, right? Awfully relevant to any member of the public. The insinuation is that maybe it was somehow too complex for us to understand, but I assure you that a lot of the residents know much more about air pollution than any of the council members, or even the attorneys for the parish for that matter. So it's just preposterous that there's something that the residents of St. James Parish would have been left out of.
And like you said, it's not as though these residents are unfamiliar with the situation. There are many chemical plants in St. James Parish. This is a big concern. So what is the proposal for this Wanwa chemical plant?
They want to put this facility on the east bank of the Mississippi River in an area of St. James Parish called the 4th District. It is 63% African American, which is usually how they do it. They'll put it into the African American neighborhoods. And St. James Parish has a very detailed plan to put a significant amount of industry in the black neighborhoods there. It's awful what they're doing. Wanwa in particular is of concern for a couple of reasons. One is one of the chemicals that they have on site is not safe in any amount. It's a chemical called phosgene. It was used as chemical warfare in World War I. It's highly dangerous, and to say it's going to be so near to people is not a safe proposition. We're talking about a mile and a half away from people's homes. Second point is that the residents, as compared to Wanwa that wants to move in now, the residents have been there since the 1800s. Barbara Washington, who was actually quoted on this podcast, it's called I Didn't Want This Fight. It's a podcast that was done. And she says that, you know, my great-great-great-great-grandmother came out from slavery in 1874 and bought my family's land. And yet the parish council is absolutely standing on the side of, you know, a Chinese company instead of its local residents. And a third point, I know I said 2 points, but a third point is that there's already a very dangerous situation in that region. There's a fertilizer plant called Mosaic. They have an extremely volatile mountain of chemicals with a toxic lake on top. I know that sounds like it's from science fiction, but it's actually true and it's happening. And, you know, the mountain with the toxic lake on top was moving and nobody knew it until a sugarcane farmer pointed it out. And so that situation is still unresolved. And yet they plan to put a dangerous chemical plant nearby. I mean, at no level does any of this make common sense.
For people who might not be familiar with the area that we're talking about, where is St. James Parish and why is it referred to as Cancer Alley?
Cancer Alley is the region between New Orleans and our capital of Baton Rouge that is filled with petrochemical plants and neighbors right nearby. And for decades now, people have complained of all kinds of illnesses, including cancer. And so it has just have this homegrown nickname now of Cancer Alley. So that's that nickname. And St. James is one of those parishes between New Orleans and Baton Rouge. And it already has a good number of chemical plants and tank farms and pipelines. And yet the state and the parish have really drawn a bullseye over it to add an incredible additional amount of facilities. And so right now it's a beautiful, you know, it's a great parish, but if they move in everything they want to move in, it's over, right? Certainly it's over for the African American community, and I think it won't be good for anybody.
For, you know, the people who want this chemical plant there, this Wanwa plant, What would it add to the chemical industry in Louisiana?
It's hard to know. When they have meetings in secret, right, we don't have all of the information. What we do know is that all the component parts of this factory, of this plant, are being fabricated in China and then imported here. There have been various unions here who have protested that and said that the equipment could have been made in Texas and also along in other areas along the Gulf Coast. But they are insisting on importing it from China. And the state government is saying that's fine. And the parish government is saying that's fine. And, you know, their fable, their consistent fairy tale is that this is going to provide jobs. But if you look at the job ads, they are based in Texas or in Baton Rouge. And one of them has a requirement, and I'm sure many do, that you speak Mandarin. So who are these jobs going to, and how many are there really? You know, there are a lot of good jobs to be had in the solar industry, in renewable energy. There's no reason we have to rely on this sort of toxic industry.
And so what does your group hope to achieve with this lawsuit? The lawsuit is related to the secret meeting,
yes,
not ultimately to the allowance or not of the chemical
right.
plant.
Look, we know, we're not naive. We're standing up against big industry, and we know that there's some real rot there. We know that there is underhanded behavior every step of the way. And it's hard to find, it's hard to prove, but in this case, we did find it with Wanwa. And so we certainly want to shed light on what we consider to be a corrupt process. And then also, of course, we want to stop it. And so we are looking for everything we can find to do that.
Ann Rolfes is the founding director of the Louisiana Bucket Brigade. Ann, thank you so much.
Thanks. It was fun to come.
The Orleans Parish School District is looking for ways to prevent the recent graduation scandal at John F. Kennedy High School from happening again. School Superintendent Henderson Lewis wants to hire someone to audit all of New Orleans High School students' transcripts. Meanwhile, on Thursday, the New Beginnings Schools Foundation voted unanimously to surrender the charters for its two schools, Kennedy and Capdow, at the end of the next school year. Marta Jusen was the first reporter to publish this story back in March. Marta, let's start with the surrender of the New Beginnings charter.
There was definitely mounting pressure coming over the last few weeks for the New Beginnings board. The school district had really begun to crack down and was laying out, you know, numerous violations that had happened at Kennedy over the last year and perhaps longer than that. So the surrender, I don't think, comes as too much of a surprise, but I'm sure it's a shock to students and families. You know, they're getting ready for school in the fall, and here's their board kind of backing out. Now, it's important to note the school is not going to close or anything, but New Beginnings is going to run it for the next year. So kids are going to be able to go back to school in the fall, but I'm sure it's still a shock, especially for, you know, staff members, too, to learn that this is going to be the last year New Beginnings will run these two schools.
The timing of this is really interesting, too. As you said, kids are getting ready to go back to school, but Kennedy students were also registering this week. A day after kids were registering, all of a sudden it's announced that the school is not going to exist after the next year, and maybe kids and their families would have made different choices.
Yeah, I do think that's unfortunate timing. I understand that they probably want to maintain stability, but it's also a city of choice. So it'd be nice for these families to have known sooner if the people they thought were going to be in the building aren't necessarily going to be there. And if the school is kind of going in this direction, maybe they would have wanted to make a different choice.
We have some tape from the board meeting on Thursday night. New Beginnings board president Raphael Gang was pretty emotional. Let's take a listen.
It has been nothing short of one of the most depressing things that I've ever seen in my entire career in life, to see what we and to learn what we've learned through this process.
Aside from expressing his feelings, Gang also said that the board can't share all of the details of the investigation right now. What might that mean?
We're not exactly sure. We do understand that obviously there's going to be some personal student information in there, and we wouldn't expect to get that. But I think the public, with pretty good reason, expects to get a pretty full audit of what happened at this school. What went wrong? Were kids missing classes, tests, fundamentals? People deserve to know what happened, and I do hope that the board plans to release that in the future. I imagine what they're looking at right now is just course credits, these credit recovery programs they were having problems with, special education, and other services. But, you know, what we don't know at this point is kind of how deep this goes, and that's what's really concerning.
In terms of, we know that this year's senior class was affected, but it could run farther down into the lower classes too.
Right. That is definitely the big concern here. They're auditing the 9th, 10th, and 11th graders' files right now. Hopefully that's going to be complete soon so these kids can get a good start to the year. And I know that Kennedy's hiring extra counselors this year, so they're pretty aware of that. And the Orleans Parish School Board is also paying attention. But the public deserves to know what kind of shape those kids are in going forward.
The details that have come out in this investigation have been pretty bad, and New Beginnings will shut down after one more school year. If they've got such a bad track record, why do they get to run a school for even one more year?
That's a question a lot of members of the public are asking right now. We've certainly seen that in reaction to these stories. I'm curious whether or not state and federal funding has played into this. When the district took over Harney in December, they learned that they couldn't access the federal funding to the school, and that created a problem. So it's possible that that's one reason. But overall, this is a pretty unusual arrangement. I've never seen it before. And so hopefully it works out okay for these kids, and that both the district and the state are keeping a close eye on New Beginnings.
And to that point of more oversight, tell me about this new job opening at OPSB.
The district is looking to hire an assistant director of high school accountability. It seems a pretty direct response to what's been happening at Kennedy. This is a person who is supposed to develop an auditing system to go into high schools, look at student records and course offerings and how they're using credit recovery programs. All of those things were problems at Kennedy. And this person would also, it looks like, perform an annual audit for every single high school student.
I feel like when I was in high school, I had a guidance counselor who was supposed to make sure that along with me and probably my parents, that I was meeting all of the graduation requirements. Does that role exist in the school district?
Yeah, I mean, you know, Kennedy had a counselor, if not maybe more than one, but I think what this person is going to do in a centralized role is they're going to work with those counselors and high school leaders and kind of say, hey, what does your graduation pathway look like? Do you have everything you need for these students here at this school? You know, from what we're seeing at Kennedy with certain kids missing fundamental courses and others missing tests, I think it was honestly part a problem of a lack of record keeping and then another part just not knowing what to offer and not keeping track of those state requirements for diplomas.
You have been reporting on this, like we said, since the beginning, that some of the students at Kennedy were ineligible to graduate due to grade inflation, which is one category of problem, but many others couldn't graduate because they didn't meet the course requirements. So this assistant director of accountability is supposed to help with that, but that it seems like a very large number of students to have to audit.
Absolutely. It does seem like a lot of work. I'm assuming this will look somewhat like helping every school develop a plan of what are their freshman requirements, sophomore requirements, and then, you know, kind of what can you hedge on? Like maybe freshmen have to take these five courses, you know, math, English, science, etc. But they can take either art or gym, you know, something to make sure that they're using those elective credits correctly versus what should be foundational courses. And, you know, some of the problems at Kennedy had to do with students who had transferred in and were missing credits. So, I mean, potentially there's an opportunity here. And I know this is kind of against the charter attitude of autonomy. But if schools are actually talking about what they're offering at different grade levels, and if they're somewhat in alignment on that, then, you know, if a student transfers schools during the middle of high school, maybe this, you know, these problems wouldn't have happened.
As you said, charter schools really try to remain autonomous, but OPSB ultimately maintains oversight, and it's clear with this new position that they're looking to increase that oversight.
Right, and I think we're seeing, you know, this is kind of a slow trend that we've seen ever since, let's say, charters expanded and kind of reached their max expansion of an all-charter system where everyone is their own district and completely independent. But we've seen everyone kind of regroup almost like a pendulum swinging back towards the middle. And, you know, now we have centralized enrollment, we have centralized discipline services and oversight. I think this position shows that the district is looking to gain a better handle over what's happening in charter schools.
That's something that you will certainly continue to keep an eye on. Marta Jusen, thank you so much.
Thank you.
In May, Mayor LaToya Cantrell announced a sweeping infrastructure deal with the state of Louisiana. Touted as a huge victory for the mayor, the deal would direct tourism tax dollars to the city for infrastructure repairs, including a new tax on short-term rentals. Michael Isaac Stein has been following the story. Michael, can you recap for us what this deal encompasses?
Yeah, so the deal was basically to get more money, you know, like you said, to infrastructure, particularly at the Sewerage and Water Board. It included, you know, an upfront one-time payment of roughly $50 million. And then it also includes some recurring annual revenue that the mayor has estimated around $26 million. So part of that recurring revenue, it's going to be a 1% increase on hotel taxes, all of which will go into the infrastructure fund. And then there's also this short-term rental tax, which is not instituted yet, but if it is, it would be up to a 6.75% tax.
So that was what was set up with the state. Then the next step is it goes to the city council.
Right, yeah. So just like a lot of the stuff we cover, there's about 1,000 steps before this thing is actually resolved. But so the first thing that has to happen is the city council has to call for this ballot measure. So that's what they're in the process of doing right now, and that's what they started to do on Thursday. On August 8th at their meeting, they'll vote on the final ballot language, and then on November 16th, voters will go out and decide whether they want to do this or not. if voters say yes, then there's, you know, more steps after that. The first being that the council would have to actually vote to levy this tax. And they could do that up to 6.75%. So it could be, you know, hypothetically, it could be lower as well.
This part where the public gets to weigh in, what exactly does the public get to decide? Only whether or not they want to allow the city council to put the tax on short-term rentals?
So it's basically voting on giving the city council the authority to do this. That's basically the short end of it. I mean, it's not a vote on how much it will be, how the money will be spent, or anything like that.
All right. So say we get past there and say that the public decides, yes, the city council can levy this tax of up to 6.75%, which has already been decided. The revenue distribution has already been set. What does that look like?
Yeah, that's right. So the state legislature basically decided where the money would go if this tax was in place. So 75% of the revenue would go to a New Orleans infrastructure fund, the exact same place where that new hotel tax would go. But 25% would go to New Orleans and Company. And so New Orleans and Company, it's a tourism industry entity, a private organization that already gets a lot of public funding. And kind of the ironic thing here was that this whole deal was kind of pitched as a fair share deal. So basically looking at the millions of dollars that go to tourism industry entities and trying to reclaim some of that to spend on general municipal needs like infrastructure. But here, part of that deal is actually creating a new revenue stream that goes to the tourism industry. So that's been fairly controversial.
Tell me a bit more about this controversy then involving the amount that New Orleans and Company stands to get here. Who particularly is upset about this?
Well, let's go back for a second. So there's currently a disparity between hotel taxes and short-term rental taxes. Short-term rental taxes are significantly lower. So as the city council has been working on overhauling short-term rental regulations, one thing they've been looking at is how they could use that gap between hotel taxes and short-term rental taxes to raise money for affordable housing. So basically the plan, you know, what the intent of many council members was to create a new fee structure. Because remember, the council cannot levy on its own percentage taxes. So they would have to do it through fees. But the idea would be by levying new fees, trying to bring some parity between hotel taxes and short-term rental taxes. And those fees would go to affordable housing projects. Now, one of the controversies here is that if you pass this 6.75% tax, it kind of takes away the council's ability to create as many fees as they wanted to. So Councilwoman Kristen Palmer, her original plan was to create fees that would raise what she said would raise $20 million a year for affordable housing. She said that she's still going to go after some fees, but they will not be nearly that high. So the Greater New Orleans Housing Alliance sent out an email saying that this tax is bad for affordable housing. So, I mean, this was money that some affordable housing advocates were counting on, or at least hoping was coming. So that's the first controversy. The second one, you know, as we already discussed, this whole deal was pitched as a way to get more money back from the tourism industry, which is largely unaccountable to the public in terms of how it spends that money. And here we're handing over even more. What council members were talking about a lot was, you know, okay, we're going to hand over this money. How do we know what they're going to spend it on? Can we ensure that it's spent in a way that citizens want? And all of that is unclear. And so I think that is where the main fight on this is going to be the council demanding more transparency, more accountability on how this money is spent. And this is actually one place where the council does have a little bit of power, because if this is all passed, if the public approves it, the council passes it, there's actually another step. So the council will have to approve a cooperative endeavor agreement for New Orleans and Company that will allow it to collect that revenue. And until they do, that money is just going to collect in an escrow account that no one can really touch. Now, the council does not have the power to amend the CEA, but what they can do is they can keep just denying it, not passing it over and over until it comes to them in a shape that they like. So I think that's where you're going to see, if this is all passed, that's where you're going to see the council flex and make some demands in terms of transparency.
And there's another issue here, obviously, with short-term rentals. Overall, the city council has been working on overhauling regulations of short-term rentals in the city. if New Orleans is so dependent on this short-term rental tax to help fund infrastructure repairs, might that influence the council's allowance of more short-term rental licenses?
That was actually brought up at the meeting on Thursday as well. So when the short-term rental tax was first proposed, the Cantrell administration had predicted it would raise $10.5 million a year. But if you look at the fiscal note on the piece of legislation that explains how they got that number, they're assuming that going forward, annual short-term rental revenue, and that's just, you know, people spending money on short-term rentals, not just taxes, but that the annual amount of money spent on short-term rentals in New Orleans will actually be higher than it was last year, which is interesting because, like you said, the council is, you know, poised to set up brand new regulations. Short-term rentals in almost every category are falling. So the question is, number one, will we actually get $10.5 million? And number two, like you said, will the mayor be incentivized to maybe, you know, encourage the council to make less restrictive regulations? And so that question was brought to Cantrell's chief of staff at Thursday's meeting, and he said that basically, no, that's not the administration's intent, and that they will not be trying to increase short-term rentals in the city just to raise infrastructure money.
And that would be a problem for the city council as well, because a lot of these current council members during their campaigns ran on a platform of tightening short-term rental regulations.
Right. And since they've gotten in, I mean, they acted almost immediately, putting that temporary ban on the most popular type of short-term rental permit. And yeah, now they've been working well over a year to take action on this. So this is kind of their marquee piece of governing, you know, of this new city council. So yeah, I mean, they take the issue of short-term rentals very seriously, the way it connects to neighborhood cohesion, gentrification, affordable housing. So yeah, if that happens, which again, the chief of staff said it would not, that would definitely be a significant problem for the council.
The council's big issue pairing up with Mayor Cantrell's big success this year. We'll see how that plays out, and thank you for keeping an eye on it, Michael.
Yeah, thank you.
That's it for this week. Thanks for listening to Behind the Lens. I'm your host, Jessica Rosegard. We'll be back next Friday. And please consider supporting nonprofit journalism in New Orleans. Go to support.thelensnola.org to make a donation today.